Everything is spiritual. Everything has a spirit. Everything was brought to you by the Creator, the one Creator.
Indian Month on KFAI. That was Boogie the Beat with Bear Song. And I played that one just for you, Melissa. That one was, I believe, an Ojibwe song originally. So that was for you.
Oh, thank you. I think that's like the Sweat Lodge Top 100.
Right.
Hot 100.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Hot 100.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Alfred. We just spent an hour talking about census mobilization. One of our guests, Jolene Jones from NACDI, is a trooper. She's staying with us for this next hour as we transition into a conversation about issues that impact the East Phillips community, which of course impact a large part of the urban native community here in Minneapolis that is home in the East Phillips community. We have on the phone with us, or rather in the Zoom chat with us, Karen Clark, who is Executive Director of Women's Environmental Institute, and of course is the former representative in the Minnesota House for the community in and around East Phillips, represented by House 62A. She's the former rep. And we are joined by also Rory Wakeemup, who is an artist and an activist and who does a lot of work in community here in Minneapolis, in the Twin Cities area, and is really thoughtful about these issues as it concerns green zones, the Southside Green Zone, what's happening in the East Phillips community around the Roof Depot site, and all of these issues that are interconnected. We also want to shout out Cassie Holmes, who we understand is listening to us online. She couldn't be with us today, but we shout her out because she's at work. And I think had she not been at work, she would have joined us in our Zoom chat today. So we want to shout out Cassie Holmes, right, Alfred?
Yeah, definitely keeping things lively on our Facebook feed right now. We are also broadcasting on American Indian Month on KFAI Facebook page, as well as the KFAI.org Facebook page. So we are all, we are reaching the people every which way we can.
We are famous right now.
Exactly. Yeah. So you've got a lot of fans, Jolene, particularly with your niece Cassie. And just as a reminder, everyone can in cyber world in the way that we're doing this now in Facebook can see you. So make sure you're showing off your pearly whites for everybody.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we know in this hour, again, we're going to talk a little bit about an issue that's really important and has long been important, and that's air quality in South Minneapolis, in and around the East Phillips community. That includes Midtown Phillips, Ventura Village, and all of the communities who are right there. And we know low-income communities, Native communities, and communities of color experience unequal health, wealth, employment, and educational outcomes, but are also overburdened by environmental conditions caused by traffic and stationary pollution sources like brown sites, blight, and all these issues that have to do with substandard housing. But we kind of wanted to hone in on one issue that's that has taken center stage this week again. So again, we welcome all three of our guests, and we want to check in with you all. How are you all doing? Karen Clark, I can see your lovely face here in our Zoom chat. How are you doing during the stay-at-home order?
I'm doing okay. I have to say I've been, although I've been retired from the legislature for going on 2 years, I'm very involved in some legislative work right now. So I'm a little tired, just like those legislators that are going there every day. But I'm good. I'm spending most of my time with the Women's Environmental Institute, which means I am doing some farming, and that takes me back to some roots and some nice fresh air that I invite you all to come and share with me sometime.
I would be happy to. And we are Alfred and I, we have dubbed ourselves, because we're on KFAI, we have dubbed ourselves the Fresh Air Indians. And we're having a lot of fun.
Exactly.
Here on KFAI.
Oops, I lost you there.
We're just telling a little inside joke that we've dubbed ourselves the Fresh Air Indians here on KFAI for the month of May, and having a little bit of fun with that. And
wonderful.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Rory, wake them up. Are you on the line? We can't see you, but I think you're with us on the phone in our Zoom chat. Yeah.
Yes, correct. Yeah, I don't know, but it tells me that my video is on, but for some reason it's not showing. So I don't. But usually Zoom does work. But yes, I am here.
Awesome. And how are you doing at home? How's the stay-at-home order treating you? How are you doing?
To be honest, a little depressed. I work at Anishinaabe Academy. It kind of kicks off all my work for Indian Month kickoff is incorporating these concepts. We are still here, and environmental justice issues. And this year we're going to incorporate the Green Zones work plan, since they just finished up with it this year. So we just started workshops, and then we're going to just go full tilt into it. And then, yeah, school's been canceled, and we've been having troubles getting, you know, art to kids and trying to, or art materials to kids and all the other stuff. So once May 1st hit and we couldn't march, it got real then. You know, I thought it'd all pass over and we'd get back. But then once we weren't marching on May 1st and we're having trouble getting in touch with kids and even communicating with each other, because we're not naturally Zoom folks. We like to see each other and be in the same rooms and all that. So it was a little hard. So now figuring out how to adapt is kind of the next, figuring out what the next new normal is, I guess. I don't know, but hopefully for for Indigenous Peoples Day this fall, like we can, get some type of interaction, or even sooner. But yeah, it's kind of, things are slow. But anyway, aside from that, though, family's healthy, everyone's healthy, and you know, so on the family front, it's all good.
That's good. I'm glad to hear. But that's real. I thank you for sharing that. I really do. I know, you know, we're not used to connecting this way. And it is really, really tough. And I think people go through different periods, you know, being okay with it and then struggling and kind of coming back and, you know, can be a little bit of a seesaw. So, you know, if you're listening out there, we also want to just say, you know, we're here on the radio, but we also hear you if you're struggling and, you know, we're hoping that we're connecting with you wherever you are in the community. And we do hope to be able to be together again really soon. This past Monday, Robert Pilot was the host of one of our special programs for American Indian Month. And he just said it really beautifully and really simply. And I'll say it again. I just miss you guys. I just miss being able to see your smiling faces, you know? You know, look forward to a time when we can gather in person. Part of the reason we're doing what we're doing on KFAI for Indian Month is because we have the ability, you know, just through our terrestrial radio signal to reach people here in Minneapolis. And Zoom has sort of increased our reach in a way that we probably couldn't have thought of before. So that is a little bit of a silver lining. So I want to also say hi to Jolene Jones, who has been on the phone with us now for about an hour and 15 minutes. She's hanging in there. She is the woman on the scene because she does so much work for Native American Community Development Institute, particularly in the East Phillips neighborhood. Jolene, could you kick us off and tell us a little bit about, like, what is the Southside Green Zone? Can you just tell us a little bit about what that is, and we're gonna get into this issue around environmental racism. What is this? What is the Southside Green Zone?
The Southside Green Zone, it created green zone and green neighborhoods. East Phillips is one of them. Little Earth is part of that. I think Karen can explain it a little bit better than I can. I'm more on the part about breathing the air and making our children safe in a better way. So I think Karen might be the one to explain it better. It's a little bit more political than people think.
Okay, I can jump in a little bit. Thanks, Jolene. Great to see you. You must be in your car, huh? So the Southside Green Zone is something that was created by an act of the Minneapolis City Council. As Jolene said, it was a political decision to create this area to really look at the inequities that are going on with our communities around health, especially toxic pollution, disproportionate health problems related to that. And it's all connected to poverty and to race. And the Green Zone really is a geographical area that was identified as having particular burdens related to the fact that this is where low-income people live, where a majority of the people are community of color, the Native American Indian families. And this is an area that needs special concern. Otherwise, it's just going to continue to have very serious health disparities and other inequities, you know. So it was created, I believe, there was kind of an informal working group that was trying to work with climate change and climate justice at the city of Minneapolis, and they made some recommendations, and eventually that resulted in the creation of this geographical area based on, again, looking at demographics, looking at the statistics of poverty and race, and saying, what's going on here? Why this place needs special investment, special concern. Mm-hmm. There's a South Side Green Zone and a North Side Green Zone, and with that, you would think there would be special attention paid to the residents who live there to help, as I mentioned, invest in some of the kinds of needs that people have. But I have to say, so far, that investment has fallen short of what it needs to be. It could get better yet. And there's some good ideas out there, but right now it's a big struggle.
Jolene, can you talk a little bit about the impact of environmental pollution in East Phillips, in particular, the impact on respiratory health?
So, you know, we have some of the highest rates of asthma in the urban area in Minneapolis is in East Phillips. Little Earth has astronomical asthma rates for our children. We've also had 3 children die of heart conditions. You know, somebody needs to investigate what we've been through. We have a The asthma rates are very high. You think the Hennepin County commissioners would want to be involved in this? Nope, there's nobody helping us. They created the green zones, but nobody's helping us with our voice. Our voices are being unheard of how dangerous this is to our community. And as a resident of Little Earth, it's just right across the street from us. It's right across the street from our youth farm. It's very scary to know that our political people don't care. And I'm going to say it. I know a lot of people don't, but I'll take the heat for it. Even our own city council person didn't support us. Mm-hmm. They couldn't support our community, our voice. You know, they have people on, this person who sits on the city council who's backed by the Green Party. It must be green for only his community because they didn't support us either. So I'm very upset about how we're ignored and how we're treated. We have nobody sticking up for us, nobody helping us. This is all community led right now. They created this green zone and offered us no support.
And tell me a little bit about the polluters in East Phillips. So when people hear that there's asthma, people hear that there's heart disease, what is at the root cause of some of that illness?
Many years of environmental racism. We have, right down the block from us, we have the Roof Depot. We have, oh my God, I can't think of their name. My brain just locked. I'm so sorry, Melissa.
The Smith Foundry?
Smith Foundry. You know, in the summertime, we can be outside, and all of a sudden, you'll see a big cloud of smoke, and the air will stink. And you'll have all the residents here at Little Earth tell you that. But they tell us they're not releasing anything in the air. But where does that odor come from? Where does that cloud of smoke come from? You know, we even have right across from us where they tried to build a painting station for the light rail without permission. You know, everything's surrounding our community. And it's like, how many of our people have to have asthma for you to care? How many of our children have to die for you to care? How many? You know, we're 38 different tribes here at Little Earth. And the surrounding community is very diverse. And that's what they count on. That's what they count on is that we're so diverse, we do not have the ability to break the language barriers between us. That's what they count on.
I want to ask a question about sort of where we're at right in the moment with COVID-19. It's certainly got to be distressing. It's distressing to hear about the asthma, to hear about the heart disease, but then we add coronavirus and the illness that it causes, COVID-19. What are you hearing from community in terms of their concern about the already high rates of respiratory illness and now this disease that really impacts the lungs?
They're really scared. They're really scared for their children. You know, we have children that have asthma that are just under a year old. Then we have older children with it. They go outside. If our air quality is not good, their lungs are affected. With COVID, that affects it. You know, in a heartbeat, it kicks our ass. You know, we already have diabetes. We have everything else going on. And now we can't even breathe clean air. And now there was a study, and I couldn't find it, Melissa, before I got on here, talking about clean air and COVID. That the communities that have not had clean air, that have faced this, are going to suffer more from COVID. And we know that because nobody cares about us. That's why we're surrounded by these.
The polluters.
The polluters that are surrounding us and our public officials who allow it and continue to allow it.
Thank you for that. One of the things, so I host a show on KFAI on Monday. It's called Sanctuary Arts and Activism. And Rory, I want to bring you into the conversation as an artist, as somebody who works in community. How does your work as an artist assist in helping community members sort of think through these issues and engage with some of these issues around respiratory health or working to stop some of these polluters from polluting the air in their neighborhoods? How does art help people think through some of those issues?
Yeah, good question. My personal process, since I returned back to Minneapolis from grad school 3 years ago, has kind of morphed into the most successful way to do it is by gathering for justice movements, environmental and social justice, is meeting with the folks that work in those fields every day, like Karen and Jolene, for, as it pertains to our local environmental issues. And then get as much information as possible on this Green Zones work plan. I wish my video was working. It's pretty solid. It took 2 years to really refine it down because there's just such an eclectic range of toxifiers, right? But then getting that proper information into succinct messaging that we can use for community arts projects. So like if we paint a banner or I do these bring your own fabric and we'll screen print for free. So folks will get this artwork that's informed by the folks that are educated in these issues. And then we share the information with them. So they have this artwork they can take home or put a yardstick, you know, put it in their yard or march with it. And then those little, that art helps them share the stories and the information with others. So it really helps spread information and proper information from the folks that are working in the field. And then in schools, I've been, well, it, primarily with Anishinaabe Academy, but with Indian Ed in general, I hope to infuse, because we do missing and murdered Indigenous concepts in class as well. But since it's kind of a heavier issue, it's been converted into you are sacred, you are valuable, and you are indispensable and irreplaceable. So it kind of combats some of the systemic issues. So we come up with these clever ways so it doesn't become a depressing thing, but more information is power and education and community together is creates power. And then I help the teachers infuse these concepts into curriculum through art projects, and then we march with them. So that's another wing of things we do or present. And we have we were going to have an Earth Day event this year and to invite community into the school where Green Zones council members could engage with parents and community and our politicians to converse and educate each other about the issues. So it becomes a very humanizing experience as well. So the art becomes more of a subversive tactic to get folks together that might not normally talk to each other about it or get to know each other. So it helps with that engagement.
Mm-hmm. It kind of brings people together around some common ideas to share some information. That's dope. You know, some of our listeners will know that the community members in and around East Phillips have for a long time now been trying to develop an urban farm at the what's called the Old Roof Depot site. Can you tell us a little bit, just briefly a little bit about what that is, and then a little bit about the standoff that the community finds itself in with the city of Minneapolis? Just give us a little bit of background about that.
What's going on with the Roof Depot situation is just a travesty. It's a travesty of environmental injustice. And the reason that we decided to, in the community, to try to work with our legislators to put change the law is because back in 2008, when I was in the legislature and Senator Linda Berglund was in the Senate, we passed a law that said this part of East Phillips, right around Little Earth and nearby, you know, it's about maybe a 15-20 block area, which is deeply affected by something called arsenic Superfund site. In other words, there was arsenic that was deposited in our communities, and it's a toxic substance. That, along with other air pollution that was going on there, that caused this disproportion among people. And we actually put on a map. We mapped a dot of asthma from the traffic, because sources are the number one sources of asthma in our state. And asthma is the number one reason that our children miss school in the Minneapolis school system. Creates a very vicious cycle there. Also, we had 600 homes that had their yards removed, including mine. I think it was number 30, because we have too much arsenic on the ground from this arsenic Superfund site. We have several very significant polluting industries, Bituminous Roadways, which is basically the asphalt plant, and Smith Foundry. And as mentioned earlier by Jolene, the oversight of that is really missing. They haven't had a permit update for 20 years, and they're spewing out air pollution that is causing a lot of problems that aren't even diagnosed yet because we don't have the monitoring capability that we should have. There's some monitoring going on, but it's not enough. So the Roof Depot was a building that used to be a Sears warehouse built back in 1947. Really solid building. And it came up for sale a couple of years ago. And the neighborhood said, oh my goodness, this is right next to these two industrial facilities. It's right across the block from Little Earth. It's right here in the midst of this arsenic triangle area, they call it. Why don't we make something there that won't be polluting, that will be an asset to the community, and that will really deal with giving people in this community power to take back healthy air, and so on. And one of the issues was, let's take that building and turn it into a year-round indoor urban farm, growing good food. Because again, this is an area where there's no close by large grocery store. People have to cross over 55 or go up to Franklin Avenue. There's just nothing nearby, relying on the corner stores that don't always have fresh and high quality food. So the idea to create this indoor urban farm was expanded, and it was brought to the legislature at that time. And I was able to work along with Senator Hayden to pass legislation that would allow the neighborhood to actually buy that building or do the work that would allow us to buy it. And one of the things we did was pass a bill, $319,000, to help do architectural drawings, community organizing, a really multiracial group, Native American leadership, particularly from Little Earth, and then also Somali community involvement and Latinx involvement. And it was just very exciting what was beginning to happen in the community here. There was a plan to do this kind of work, two levels of aquaponics, green jobs would be created, job training. There would be a cultural market there that Little Earth talked about being able to sell some of the beautiful native crafts that are created in this neighborhood, a farmer's market, a youth-led cafe. I'm excited about it because it was very exciting, you know, to think about. Well, the city said, oh, we forgot to tell you. For a few years now, we've been planning to get that same spot, that same land. We want to knock down that incredible building, 230,000 square feet, which is about half the size of the IDS tower if you laid it down. We want to knock down that building, and we're going to build a few other places. We're going to put storage there from our Water Works Department. So we're going to store our water pipes, our sewer pipes, our manhole covers, our hydrants, snow and salt in the winter. And we're going to do some training there. And, you know, there's going to be 400 some employee car parking lot built. And we'll be parking another 400 some trucks, including diesel, on that site. And that's what we want to do. And the city said, too bad that you have this idea and you even got money from the state legislature to do something that would create jobs and good air and food, you know, and all these opportunities in the neighborhood. Too bad. We're going to declare eminent domain. And what that means is they could force the owner to sell to them. And they did. And they took almost $2 million more of our tax dollars to buy what the neighborhood had been negotiating already.
We're actually going to build our thing there, and you guys will have declared eminent domain and sort of gave the urban farm its walking, so to speak.
Yes, they threatened eminent domain. I think they didn't even have to declare it. They threatened it and then took over the land. And we tried to negotiate with them because we had put together, you know, architectural drawings. You should see what the kids at Little Earth put together. They had all kinds of plans, and they started practicing growing a garden with some of the funding that we got from the state to do this work. And to do this vision, you know, it was really exciting and still could be. But at any rate, the city said, no way, and we're not going to compromise with you. And so what happened is the group that came together is called East Phillips Neighborhood Institute, EPNI. And EPNI went and talked to two of our two existing state legislators, The woman who replaced my position, Representative Hodan Hassan, and our State Senator Jeff Hayden, and said, would you please put legislation together to force the city to follow this state law that was passed in 2008 that says you can't just go into that neighborhood and pollute it, you know, with traffic or anything else. You have to first measure, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has to first measure what is the effect, what is the environmental effect on the health of the people who live there? Because we had put these dots on the map that showed all this excess asthma, all this excess childhood lead poisoning, problems with the arsenic, all of these things, heart disease. These were actually graphically demonstrated to the legislature back in 2008 and updated today. That shows, again, as was pointed out earlier by Jolene and others, we have very serious racial environmental health issues here and income-related environmental health issues, and it needs to be stopped. And the opportunity that the neighborhood group was offering was exactly what the Green Zone was created for, not just to identify a problem, but to come up with some solutions. And so this incredible vision to create a farm, an indoor urban farm, you know, a place where there could be these markets and job creation for people in the neighborhood, this was being tossed away by the city. So the law would say, the new law that's being proposed would say, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency must do this analysis of the what's called cumulative health impact analysis. The burden that people already experience from pollution, we must measure what would happen if the city was allowed to go ahead and do their project with all this traffic and with unearthing the arsenic and all of that. We must do that first. So that's what the law says. You have to do that, city, because the city's saying, oh, there's a loophole in this law. It doesn't really cover us. We're exempt. And we're saying, oh, no, if you think that, we'll strengthen that law. So there's an action item I'd like to give to the listeners here, if that would be okay. It would be asking them to call to help us pass this legislation. There's only about, 10 days left of the legislative session, but there's two versions of this law, one in the Minnesota House, one in the Minnesota Senate, and they have what are called file numbers. And I'd like to give those file numbers and ask people to call legislators, call the governor. You know, we have a Lieutenant Governor, Peggy Flanagan, who's been to Little Earth and has been out in the community. We need her to get on board with this. And I'm not sure if she really knows how desperate the situation has become. She probably might need an update. So the House file number, the number of the legislation of the law, is House File 4594. If you can just jot that down. If you can't remember the number, just say the legislation that's going to protect East Phillips from pollution. Okay. And then the Senate file number is Senate File 4568. So those two legislators, Senator Hayden and Representative Hassan, are our champions right now to pass that. But we need the governor's office probably to jump right in there and say, gee, you only got 10 days left. So I'm going to put my force behind it. And if that could happen, we could stop the city from doing this damage, and we could actually create this wonderful resource that has been envisioned right here in East Phillips.
Amazing. I want to thank you for that update. And I want to go back to something Rory, given that there is sort of new action taken around to hold the city's feet to the fire in terms of a law that was passed several years ago, how do we communicate some of those the need to folks who are listening or community folks who are impacted by that? What is the opportunity for artists? What is the opportunity for community here to get on board in your opinion?
I'm glad you ask. There's multiple issues. It's really hard without funding to do community work. And as I think we've talked about this before on the radio, about the inequities in arts funding, public arts funding, that we're, when it boils down, we're getting less than 1% artists, you know, of the legacy funds and the NEA funds. So that's the first challenge. But what we I guess need to do is with this, I'll relate it to the Women's March and the 3 years of progress we have, or 4 years now with it, and there's a task force, and it's raising awareness first with that succinct messaging where we're all on the same page with the same information. Because the Green Zone's work plan, as refined as it is, it's still pretty eclectic. There's air and soil, housing inequities. You know, we're in a food desert. You know, there's just so many issues in the neighborhood. And everyone has their own pockets they champion, like. But I think the if we can combine, like band together, if we can band together and support like the lowest hanging fruit mixed in with the most urgent thing, like the roof depot, and then kind of unify and then just take one issue at a time, supporting each other with the eclectic range of cultures in the green zones as well. So, the Women's March, it took, you know, I think for art to really help, it took about 2 or 3 years of community arts workshops of an average of about 200-300 folks showing up to every workshop. And then throughout, like what I call the moccasin telegram, word spreading. And now the march is up to 3,000 folks. And that's not due to just the art. I mean, everyone's working hard and on the same page. Art is just one of those things in the tool belt that really help folks engage and becomes, I call it art therapy for the community. So folks share their stories and their pains and their tribulations and their successes together. And then the effort becomes, folks get a little more impassioned about it. So what I'm hoping to do with this Green Zones plan and the networking in the community through the community arts projects, whenever we figure out what the new normal is, I can get back on that track. And then hopefully, and I know, you know, a few years to really get, you know, a couple thousand folks showing up to actions is too late for the roof depot now, but hopefully, you know, there's a large body of informed community members showing up to events and expressing themselves in arts workshops. And then, so for example, this spring, the kids, we're going to have that community workshop on Earth Day and then march with our work on Indian Month kickoff march for both We Are Still Here issues and the Green Zones environmental issues. And Mayor Fry was going to come to our community event so folks could have some one-on-one with them and hopefully humanize the situation. So it's not just, you know, laws and rules and, you know, policies, it's people and seeing kids writing poetry about their asthma and doing collage work of photovoltaics on schools and electric buses because they don't want to sit waiting for their bus to go home at school with 10-20 buses just spitting exhaust, you know. So getting those stories, making it real. And then we had the invite from Peggy Flanagan to put some of this art at the Capitol too. But with no community arts workshops, there's no community art to share. But hopefully, you know, in the coming years, whenever we figure it out, we can get this art from the community out to the masses, you know, and humanize the issue and gain support. And with that said, we do have support from like MN350, Sierra Club, and I'm on a steering committee by 100% by 2050. And the idea is that I have a long-term plan of getting kids informed and interested now. So when jobs are created, they're informed and right there in the loop and having access to the internships and jobs and the skill sets to apply for college in these issues, you know.
Yeah, that's that's critical. I think so important to be able to share the stories, the real stories of people being impacted just by the level of toxicity and the both in the soil and in the air in East Phillips. Jolene, I want to ask you, you've heard a little bit about, Karen has described sort of this standoff between, folks in East Phillips, EPNI and the city, or the Roof Depot in the city. Is that vision for the Roof Depot, does that still feel like it's alive there in the community in East Phillips?
It does feel like it's still alive. It feels like we're still battling. I believe we can win. I believe we can win. You know, we got our senator, we've got people helping us now, finally a little bit of help, and hopefully people will call in with them bills and say they support us, and that will help move it forward, you know. And Melissa, just to make this a little bit realer here, you know, we have a youth farm. Our kids are farming. They're learning how to grow things, how to be healthier. And if it wasn't for the Shakopee Mittawakatins, we wouldn't even have clean soil back there. They're the ones who bring us soil every year, a truckload. Thank goodness for that. They do that for us for free for our children. You know, and when they talk about the trucks and the employees they want to put over there, Cedar Avenue runs between Little Earth. That's a lot of cars. We have over 500 children on property, with over half of them being under the age of 5. And we have a park that's across the street on what we call our little side. Our children cross at this stoplight all the time. We see millions of cars in the years I've lived here go through this stoplight. You know, I don't want one of our children hit. You know, when they went down to the city council, Cassandra talked to them about clean air. And one of the council members said, well, don't you want clean water? And for some reason, they're associating the Roof Depot with water, and it has nothing to do with it. But Cassandra told that city council member, can't we have both? Can't we have clean air and clean water? Mm-hmm. You know, can't we have a farm that our children can farm, that we don't have to keep trucking soil in because we have to build our beds up? Can our children be safe going to the park without a truck hitting them and killing them? You know, we have so many worries, and this is adding to our burden. I really hope people call in. Yeah. The burden is really a lot for our community members to handle.
Mm-hmm. The one
I'm really glad. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the one question that I have, so the thing that Melissa knows about that is, like, I'm a political organizer from years and years and years, years ago. And so one of the things that I like to, you know, have a question about is, so we have all of this that's in front of us. What does it look like for someone from the community to start, like, to begin the process of organizing and to make some political change, maybe even, seek elected office, right? Like, this is how Melissa and I met, right? Is that we worked on a political campaign together. And so, like, for you, Jolene, like, what are the people, who are the leaders, what is the mechanism, what's the way to success that you see?
For me, I believe our way to success is to come out and talk and make these phone calls to our elected officials. It's also, you guys, I'm going to say it, our census. We need to do our census. We need to elect officials who care for us and are going to do what they say. You know, we're coming up on voting here. Voting is very important also. Did I answer your question?
yeah, definitely. That's a great answer. I think it's always a challenge, particularly being Indigenous in such an urban setting, right? Is that, like, we have been here from the beginning and we're still invisible, right? Like, that's the frustration that we have as a community, is that, like, wow, you made that decision without even talking to any of us. So I think I really thank you, Jolene, and you, Rory, and Karen, for all of the work that you have done. And, you know,
what we want to do is put the culture back in agriculture. And we want to have a say in what goes in our own neighborhood next door to us. That's what we want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I think one of the things we've talked about a lot in community over the past few months is, you know, shifting the narrative. I think it's so easy oftentimes for other people to tell our stories. And in that way, we lose some power because we're not able to communicate just how resilient communities really are to tell even the, you know, the smallest stories of success and how important those can be in movement building. Is there a story that you want to share, Jolene, where, you know, maybe 10 minutes away from the top of the hour, is there some, you know, what keeps you going? What are the stories, or is there a story that keeps you going in this work, particularly around, you know, environmental justice, political power, and movement in East Phillips?
What keeps me going is our children, our youth. When you see them out there farming, when you see them trying to do good in their community, trying to learn green jobs, and it's not that they're being forced to, they love it. They want to learn it. They want the roof depot. They want to go over there and do things. That's what keeps me going is our youth and our children, you know, building a better future for them. Our ancestors didn't think of themselves. They thought of our children and their grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and we need to do the same because what we leave behind is what they have to survive on. And we have to make sure that it's good and that they can make it. Like they say, we're still here. We still got to do it. And I also believe that as Indigenous people, Peggy Flanagan has showed us the way. We need to start running for public office. We need to tell our own stories and not let other people tell them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so important. And hopefully we continue to see a surge of people wanting to run for office. I think that is one of the biggest things, you know, of course, you know, people, you know, they hold that sort of close to their heart, like, yeah, I think I could do it. But what does it take to actually be able, you know, to make the leap and to say, yeah, I'm going to run for office, even if it's just like for your community board or for your city council seat or for your park board seat. What does it take to get people to run?
I think we just have to keep talking. I think it's a subject that we need to not keep hidden. I think we just need to keep talking to our community and say, we need somebody to run. We need somebody to do this for our people. And I think we'll get the message across. I think there's a lot of young people out here, and by young, you know, I'm getting up there. So I mean, like in their 40s, there's a lot of people out there who would make good public officials for us, would be awesome on the park board, would be an awesome city council rep for us.
Mm-hmm. Karen, what do you think? You've certainly been in public office for the majority of your life. Do you have, you know, we've got maybe 5 minutes left. If you were going to encourage a young person from East Phillips, from Little Earth, or from any of the communities around East Phillips, what would you tell them about what it's like to be a public servant? Let me see if I can make sure we've got you unmuted here. You're good.
Okay. Well, I'd say, it's both an honor and privilege, and it's a lot of hard work. And probably the most important thing is to really, as Jolene was talking about, really be in touch with the people who you're representing and who you're accountable to. And I found it very gratifying to do that kind of work. And I also am very interested in supporting what Jolene said, which is, let's make sure that there are more Native people who are running for office, and those who are in office to really be responsive. I do think, as I mentioned earlier, I do think it'd be important in terms of this call to action that we're dealing with right now. We need to ask our Lieutenant Governor to help us. Peggy Flanagan, I think she needs a little more update from us. But I do think people coming out to vote, that census is so important, being counted. And I guess I would just have to say it's very gratifying work to be able to help empower the people you represent, you know, and I think that's what this is a lot about. If it's really, you know, honest and dedicated to community, it's got to be about empowering that very community you're trying to represent.
Well, I know that, and I think we all know that you've done that so well for so many years, and we thank you for being with us again here today. Rory, I want to give you a chance to chime in before we take it to the top of the hour? A final thoughts from you about where we might be with regards to this green zone issues and the call to and the will to power that we've been talking about?
Yeah, I think for me, the thing folks can do now is just start planting seeds in your yard, you know, and just real quick, don't plant by your house. There could be old lead chips that peeled off the years or by the garage, you know, find the open area in the yard. And Karen, we all have access and we should share. There's a map of yards that the soil has been reclaimed in, and there's some few that have not been. So folks should really learn about their soil first, or just if they can do a raised bed, but not everyone has the money. But just start growing our foods and medicines, and even if it's just to make more seeds, you know, becoming seeders and figuring it out, and planting sage and sweetgrass wherever you can, and engaging at those levels, like what can you do in your own little bubble or your household, and then supporting those like that want to get the local food to like sell. Like I think a great idea would be, you know, the Little Earth Garden, if there was guaranteed sales to the school, because they're already trying to do farm to table at schools, getting those guaranteed purchases from those small farms into schools. So it creates a community economy, you know, and that's like the first thing. But then in like the long tenure plan, just making sure kids are educated and young ones have access to this information, you know, and allowing them to engage and absorb it and talk about it and share it, and be the spokespeople of it. So like a lot of what we'll do at Anishinaabe Academy is have the kids talk about the lessons they've learned, and record it so they get practice time in front of a camera talking about it. And I mean, it's unbelievable how quick kids absorb and retain this information and really speak about it passionately. So it's just not giving up, because we're not getting funding. We're invisible. Invisibility is the new racism and all these things. Now with the COVID, it's even tougher. But the thing is just to keep plugging away and don't quit and don't get frustrated, you know. And don't put the ownership or responsibility on just the public leaders or folks running for office. Like, everyone has to show up. And if 2,000-3,000 folks show up to a rally for community gardens or whatever, then there's grant funds for folks to get these beds all over or whatever the passion is. Like, folks just have to show up and express that, you know, and support each other in it.
Yeah, that's excellent. Just want to thank everyone here. We're about a minute out. Melissa, parting thoughts?
I just want to thank everybody for hanging out with us today on air. And I think the message is clear. You know, fill out those forms wherever you may be. Let's get those dollars flowing into communities and be the seeds, right? I think that's a beautiful message.